basically goes like this. Premise one, without God, there are no objective morals or duties. Number two, there are objective morals and duties. The conclusion, therefore, there is a God. The first premise is very important to understand, and that is without God, you cannot develop an objective moral or duty standard.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Salty Pastor Podcast, a podcast designed to coach you up in your faith. The more you know, the more you can grow. Our goal is not to tell you what to think, but to help you think for yourself, because this is how your faith grows strong. When you know what you believe and why you believe it, you become a stronger person. My name is Jesse Mayer. I'll be your host, but we cannot do this without the one, the only, the Salty Pastor himself, Dr. Douglas Peake.
Hey, everyone. So glad that you're with us, joining us in this new series that we're digging into, and that is the rational belief in God and the way in which we prove this. I think you're just going to find it amazing. It's a great opportunity to share this podcast with your friends and people who have questions about how rational is it. And so hopefully this helps you in that process of letting them think for themselves as well. So do me a favor, like and subscribe. Like and subscribe. Go over to YouTube. Look up our YouTube channel. Our website's going to be up and flying. You can go there and just like and subscribe, because that really helps us expand what God is doing here.
So on Tuesday, we discussed how it is not rationally possible to develop an objective morality without an objective source.
Mm-hmm.
This seems to be the most reasonable thing you can think. However, what difference does that really make, Pastor? Like, we're using some big words here. Why does it matter?
Why does it matter? Okay, well, let's go over the proof for God's existence. It's called the moral argument, introduced by various different philosophers, but popularized by C.S. Lewis in his book Mere Christianity, and it's called the moral argument. So this is proof number one, the moral argument, and it basically goes like this. Premise one, without God, there are no objective morals or duties. Number two, there are objective morals and duties. The conclusion, therefore, there is a God. The first premise is very important to understand, and that is without God, you cannot develop an objective moral or duty standard. It's not possible to have a moral code that is objective unless there is a God, something outside of humanity that says this is what morality is. The answer is without God, there is none. And most of the emphasis that we see from atheists, scientific materialists, secularists, is they're coming up with ways to try to explain an objective morality that exists outside of humanity, but it just never works. And the reason why they want to do that is because they don't want to be called moral relativists. And when you are an atheist, a scientific materialist, or secular humanist, that is intellectually honest, the fact is overwhelming that it is impossible to develop any society where human beings flourish on moral relativism. I mean, this is just proven over and over and over again. And so it is just impossible to do. So what they're doing is they're trying to get around the first premise, but no one has been able to do it. Even the smartest atheists out there have not been able to figure out any way to say there's an objective source, because what they do is they use like a democratic approach, and they say, well, we all agree to it. I say, okay, that's still subjective.
It's still subjective.
Yeah, there's nothing objective about it.
Just because you all agree doesn't mean that it's true.
I mean, all the Germans agreed, and when Hitler was in charge, and you know, I was raised under this notion that the Nazis took over Germany, and it's a very small percentage of the population, and they oppressed everybody else and forced this to happen. And then I went to Salzburg and Berchtesgaden and the Eagle's Nest, and I went in there, and the German people worshipped Adolf Hitler. I mean, they worshipped him. They talked about how people, they would have these marches, these spiritual marches in front of his house, 20 people wide, stacked for miles long. German people just wanted to walk by the house that he was raised in there.
Wow.
I mean, I'm like, wow, this was interesting. You see all the propaganda. You see all this kind of stuff. So what happens when human beings make up their morality? It's generally not a good thing. Ravi Zacharias used to say, in some cultures, the morality is to love your neighbor as yourself. And others, in other cultures, the morality is to eat them.
That is true.
John Leo, editor of the old U.S. News and World Report, wrote about a professor of history at Michigan, University of Michigan. And he said that it was shocking to him that over 30% of his freshman class were unable to say that what Hitler did in the Holocaust was morally wrong or let alone evil. He said this shocked him, and this was in the 90s. And if you remember, I was telling you on Tuesday how this shift in education started in the late 1980s, early 90s, and it started in our universities. But for kids who are freshmen at the University of Michigan in the mid-90s to deny that the Holocaust was evil means that they had been taught to think that way.
Mm.
And this professor says over and over again, he says, look, he says, I was absolutely shocked that they would say, well, it's not something I would choose to do, but I can't say that it was morally evil. Hitler operated out of a basic morality, but it was a morality that he made up. And the people, the German people, many of them, not all, but many of them worshipped him in what he wanted to do. Lenin operated out of his morality of Marxism. Stalin operated out of his morality when he enacted the Holodomor. And a lot of people don't even know what that is. But it's considered one of the greatest genocides that ever existed in human history. What he did is, in Ukraine, they were the breadbasket for all of kind of Russia, communist Russia at that time. And what they did is they took all the, they confiscated all the grain. And then when famine came, over the course of a period of time, tens of millions of people starved to death.
Mm.
He starved them to death. And there's a debate today among these atheistic scholars whether you can actually qualify that as a genocide or not, even though it was intentionally done. So it's just shocking to me. Mao Zedong operated out of a morality when he killed over 50 million of his own Chinese people during the Cultural Revolution. Which so interesting today is Mao Zedong is worshipped there, but the Cultural Revolution you're not allowed to say anymore in China. And that's because of this reason. Pol Pot in Cambodia operated out of a morality when he ran the Khmer Rouge that killed over half of the population of his country. What's interesting is all human beings have a morality. The question becomes, is there an objective morality? And are there things that are always wrong, no matter what?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you ask the average person, they would say yes, but they wouldn't know why.
Correct.
Right? Like, if you walked up to someone and be like, hey, is it okay if I just, like, murder your child? Are you cool with that? Because I feel like it's a good choice for me.
Yeah.
They're going to probably say, well, no, that's not okay, right?
That's always wrong.
Right. And so it's like, when you really start pushing that, right, is it ad nauseum? Like you go to its furthest thing.
Very good.
You go, I've been almost 4 years with you. If I hadn't picked up a couple new words, Pastor, you should be more worried about me.
Yeah, okay.
But, I mean, if you really run that out, people will naturally go, well, no, that sounds crazy. And you're like, but that's what they're saying, right?
That's what they're saying.
And so I think that idea that there is an objective morality – inherently, we all know, but the world will tell us the opposite all day long, and we need to be prepared to be able to go, well, but actually, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what is that? Because like you said, I don't think any of those people inherently believe that they were evil, right?
Which proves the second premise. The second premise goes back to what you said earlier, and that is that some people would say, well, that's always wrong no matter what, and these people operated in an evil way. We say it's evil, But is it evil? Is it evil because I think it's a bad choice? Is it evil because I don't like it? It doesn't match my values? Or is it evil because an objective authority says it's evil?
Right.
It's always wrong no matter what. Because here's the problem, is if I say it's evil because I don't like it, then I am opening myself up to approving of the same behavior as long as I like it or think it's okay. See, isn't that strange?
Right.
And that's why it's a huge problem in our society and why our society is becoming so irrational. It's because they've adopted this notion that there is no objective authority for morality. So people can say in one hand, well, it's wrong for you to abuse my children, right? You know, but then someone will turn around and approve somebody else abusing their children for some reason. And so, well, it's not none of my business. And so you lose the capacity to have any type of objective standard. What else suffers when there's zero objective standard? Justice. What is the whole premise of justice in America? That it is equally applied to everyone.
All.
And so what is the symbol of justice in America?
Blind.
It's a woman holding scales, and what does she have on her face?
A blindfold.
A blindfold. So she is weighing the scales of justice without any prejudice. She can't see.
Right.
It's just, that's the point. It's blind justice, meaning it's objective. Well, we're losing that today.
Yeah, you ask almost anybody, they would say, do you think the justice system is working? I think it would be almost universally no.
No. And the reason it's not working is because it's not equitable. It's not equal and fair. It's misapplied.
Right.
Okay? That's a problem. Our society is becoming more and more irrational. It's an attempt to get rid of the basic belief in God that is causing all this irrationality, the adoption of a moral relativistic society. And we are getting more and more of that. And that's what kids are being taught, right? The more expressed, I think the place where this is really expressing itself more than anything else is something that's just really gotten under my skin like no tomorrow, and that is the overt sexualization of our children. Today, in our public educational system and in private elementary schools, they are specifically sexualizing your children. They are trying to get your children to adopt gender dysphoria or gender confusion. Now, in their morality, they believe that what they are doing is the right thing, just like I said earlier, right? Well, in their mind, what they're doing is right, because in their mind, they don't want to have any bigotry at all. And in their mind, kids that grow up that are sexually confused or transgendered or queer, those kids are persecuted, they have mental health issues, and their suicidal ideation is off the charts. So what we're going to do is we want to normalize it. Okay, we're going to normalize it. And so how do we normalize it? Well, we expose all of these kindergartners to all of these sexual confusing topics. Now, what they are doing, in my opinion, has become their religion, right? It is a irrational religious perspective that makes them believe that they are doing the right thing. Now, if there's no objective morality, then you have to say, they have a point, I must tolerate it. But because what they're doing, they believe is right in their own eyes.
Right.
And the Bible actually uses this reference in the Old Testament, is that everybody was doing what was right in their own eyes, meaning there was no objective standard of good or evil. Okay. Today, when Hamas, the genocidal terrorist organization, invaded Israel, they went and they murdered innocent teen girls, and then they raped their dead bodies. How do we know it? Because they filmed it and posted it on social media. I mean, we have video records of this. That is the behavior of somebody who believes that what I am doing is right. I'm not covering this up. I'm not skulking around and hiding it. I'm filming it, and I'm putting it on social media for everybody to see before it could be scrubbed. You can't see it now. But what happened is the nation of Israel actually took a lot of this footage and they put it in a video and they showed it to political leaders and other journalists, and people had to leave saying, this just so sickened me beyond belief.
Right.
Because it wasn't just that they were doing it, they were celebrating it as a good.
Right.
And so that's how irrational society becomes when you become a moralistic, a relativistically moral society, or even a global society. That's what happens when there is zero objective morality. And that's why the moral argument and the proof of God is so important.
Yeah, I think just really understanding that it can't just be, well, whatever is your truth or whatever you feel
Correct.
Is right, it really does matter. Like, it will spiral out of control.
And we're there. We really are. Yeah. This is a new religion. It's hit us. It's hit us hard. A lot of people don't know how to respond to it. They don't see it as a religion, but it is. And what people don't realize, it's actually the oldest religion known in human history. It has deep roots. It has infected our society, our universities, and most importantly, our public educational system. And it is this religion of the LGBTQ+. It is a religion, and I focus specifically on the letter Q and the letter T, which is transgender. It's called the queering of our children. This religion has tried to run under the radar of lesbian and gay because that has worked to get some type of tolerance and acceptance among consenting adults in a society that wants to have tolerance. Okay, there may be an argument for that one way or another. But this other thing, the queering of our children, is trying to run under the cover of this. It's fascinating to me that there are lesbians groups now against transgenderism. There are gay groups against transgenderism. And so the gay community, the lesbian community, is coming out to realize how devastating this new religion is that is there being used to justify in our society. And when you dig into queer theory and you really dig into this transgender ideology, what you realize is it is a religion of Marxist ideology and sexualism or hedonism brought together. It comes from the most ancient stuff recorded in the Old Testament, which is, it's called the spirit of Molech. And this is where we get the god of Baal or Baal and the goddess of Ashereth. And these were fertility cults. They were sexual cults combined with power cults. Mm. And so I think that this stuff that is happening under this Q and this T and this ideology is focusing on your children. They're going after your children, and they're doing it through the public education system. Now, what's interesting is that you can go and get this documented right and left. But what I wanted to show you is that their primary argument against Christianity, so to speak, is this, and that is transgendered youth are committing suicide. And they're committing suicide because you're judging them with your objective morality called Christianity. So if we don't get rid of your objective morality, guess what? You are going to be complicit.
You're actively forcing
these kids to kill themselves.
Right.
Okay, this of course is a lie. Just recently, one of the largest research studies on the rates of suicide attempts doubled after gender reassignment study. They specifically studied males that had what is known as vagioplasty. Right? And then 869 males who underwent vaginoplasty and 357 males who underwent phalloplasty in California from 2012 to 2018. So this is pretty, and we're talking of a data pool of well over 1,000 people that were tracked over an extended period of time. this point where it's saying what people who are saying about sex reassignment surgery is helpful in lower suicide rates were all taken within 6 months after the surgeries. Mm. So almost all of those studies were very short-windowed. This is the first one that came out that was over a four-year period. And what they found is among males, the attempted suicide rate was double than before.
Mm.
So that is a massively statistical deviation. I mean, it's huge. And so what's killing, or let me put it this way, what's raising the suicide rate of transgendered people is transgendered ideology, telling them you can change your gender without a problem.
Right.
And that's just, so they do it, and guess what? Their suicide rate doubles. So it's you that are propagating this crazy ideology, this religion that you're imposing upon kids that's causing their rates of suicide to go up. Something else that I want to say that's very, very salty is this, is that the reason why 30% of Gen Z's identify as LGBTQ+ is because of the religious proselytizing for this irrational belief system in our public school system. They are recruiting there, and people are sending their kids to public school not aware that this is going on. And if it wasn't for COVID, it would still be happening under the radar. And it was because of COVID that parents started to go, what in the world are they talking about? This is what they're talking about, and this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to sexualize your kids, and they want to do it under the radar, and here's why. Because at its core, this religious sexualization of children, the queering of children, hates Christianity beyond belief. It absolutely hates Christianity, and here's why. They believe that at its core, they are God, and that they can become whatever they want to become. You can be and become whatever you want to become. If your desire is to be another gender and you feel another gender, then it is your right to do so. And we will do everything we can to support that, affirm it, and make it happen. Christianity is the exact opposite. It says fulfillment, happiness, or joy comes in repenting from false desires that destroy you in order to be redeemed. Our value, our meaning, our happiness is found in returning to what we were meant to be. And as you can see, that is why this proof, the moral argument, is hated so much by the queer religion. The queer religion teaches that there is no objective truth, there is no morality. Become what you want and you will be happy. Christianity is in direct opposition to this religion because they cannot coexist together.
Mm.
They cannot coexist. They are diametrically opposed. In many ways, this is why you see such harsh treatment of those who believe these things, right? And who the people who believe that it's a problem and people who are speaking out are being treated incredibly harsh. They're being fired from jobs. They're being canceled. They're being called all of these names and all the thing. The main goal of this religion is to get your children to think emotionally instead of rationally. This queer religion is what produces mental health issues among Gen Z. And we talked about how earlier in the Weeds in Our Garden, how mental health issues are exploding.
Mm-hmm.
And I alluded to it a little bit on the Thursday. They are recruiting and they are proselytizing. There is a constant preaching in the media. There's a constant preaching in schools, and it's having an effect. Up today, 40%, I said earlier, you know, it's like 30% in aggregate, but 40% of all girls say they're now queer bisexual. 20% of all Gen Z people say that they're some form of LGBTQ+. Now, this is, to me, amazing because for, you know, we have records dating back hundreds and hundreds of years, centuries, right? And then we have historical record. The whole LGBTQ identification has never been over 7%, ever. And now it's over 20%? Okay, that is social contagion all over the place.
Right.
Yeah, that's what that is. That's not a natural reading of biological outcomes. That is pure proselytization and what we call social contagion ideology. They are doing this. One of the most fascinating manifestations of this religion is what is called the furries. and I don't know if you're familiar with this, but this is kids who think that they're animals. And they're now demanding that public school systems put kitty litter boxes in bathrooms so that these kids can go to the bathroom in these kitty litters. It's like, this is really off the rails.
Mm.
And why is this happening? Because it's being preached, it's being practiced as a religious thing that says, don't you dare tell me I can't believe what I don't want to believe. And when you point to, well, there is an objective standard that says this is false, what is the response? You see, is absolute and unequivocal hatred. The most pernicious, active worship in this religion is that it destroys human beings. It sacrifices human beings on the altar of their ideology, mostly children. Just like the evil recorded in the Old Testament, these tribes would sacrifice their children as burnt offerings to the god Baal or the spirit of the demon of Molech. Research today shows that this ideology, as I pointed out earlier here, this new research that just came out, is sacrificing kids as a burnt offering on the ideology by pushing operations like vaginoplasties, and they have the highest suicide rate out of every group in the world. And so I'm shocked about this, and it bothers me immensely. You can tell I'm really fired up about it, you know, because the main tactic of this secular religion is to enter into our institutions, co-opt the language, and then demand adherence to its orthodoxy. Just like saying, look, it's your orthodoxy, it's your Christianity that's causing these kids to commit suicide. No, it's not. It's you. It's you who are doing it, but they've co-opted that, and they've turned it upside down. And it does this by changing the meaning of language. And this is why objectivity is so important. We have to have an objective standard so that it doesn't matter what word you're using, whatever you call it, if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, objectively, we always know that is a duck.
Well, Pastor, thank you for diving into this a little bit more today. We thank you for covering this topic of the five proofs. I think this is really going to challenge us to be thinking for ourselves, to understand why we believe and what we believe. So thank you so much for doing that. I can't wait to hear more in the coming weeks as we dive into this, and especially on Sunday as you kick off this series here at Foothills Christian Church. Thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure you like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week here on the Salty Pastor Podcast.
Think for yourself.